Ms. Hanks, Mr. Cleary.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. The main question presented in this case is whether the petitioner, Mike Floyd, was prejudiced by the actions of his trial counsel. Petitioner's trial counsel had powerful exculpatory evidence, which he inexplicably failed to present on the petitioner's behalf. That exculpatory evidence was serology evidence, which tended to show that the petitioner did not commit the rape, but that his co-defendant might have, and evidence which would have impeached the victim's voice identification of the petitioner. The serology evidence came in the form of an FBI report on the rape kit. That report was discovered at trial counsel. It showed that sperm on the victim's panties came from someone other than the petitioner. Trial counsel testified that there was no strategic reason for his failure to use that report, and that that report would have been critical to his defense. The bottom line is that it appears the trial counsel did not understand the report and its implications. Respondent would argue that the petitioner was not prejudiced because there was some inculpatory aspect to the serology evidence. I would first note that the state had this evidence at trial and didn't use it, which suggests that the remaining serology evidence was in fact...
Maybe it was just inconclusive, so it didn't add anything to the trial.
I would agree with that the remaining serology evidence...
No, the whole thing was inconclusive, taken as a whole.
Well, not the test on the victim's panties.
No, but you can't just single out one little thing. You have to look at the whole report.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, I would disagree.
That was the same blood type as your boyfriend, wasn't it?
That's correct, Judge. That post-conviction, some 14 years later, the victim...
It was pretty inconclusive, wasn't it?
Well, at the time of the trial, certainly, there was no... nothing about the boyfriend was introduced. But clearly, the sperm in the victim's panties came from someone other than the defendant. When the victim went to the hospital, the examining physician noted that she had that there was evidence of recent sexual intercourse. Even at post-conviction, the state's expert testified that it was more probable that that A blood type, the sperm on the panties, came from the assailant and not the boyfriend some days before. So I think this is the case where you can parse out the serology test. You don't have to take the report as a whole. There was only one of those serology tests found sperm. That was in the victim's panties. That sperm came from someone other than Mike Floyd. That's undeniable. The other tests were things which were swabs, smears, and a vaginal wash. Those things can very well have cells from both the victim and the assailant or her boyfriend. So those tests, again, I think Your Honor's right, those other tests are inconclusive. What's not inconclusive is the sperm on the panties. That's conclusively not Mike Floyd. But in any event, Williams versus Taylor would tell us that even evidence which has some inculpatory aspects to it, a petitioner can still be prejudiced by the failure to present that evidence, and that would be the case here, Your Honor. This evidence was powerful evidence which should have been presented on petitioner's behalf, especially given his defense, which was, I didn't do it. Additionally, there were notes from the examining physician. These are the first recorded accounts of what the victim said happened. She told Dr. Morgan that she was raped by a man from the other car who didn't speak, but that prior to and during intercourse, she was told what to do by the man with the gun. It's been argued that this is somehow ambiguous. It isn't. This is clearly powerful impeachment evidence of what the victim testified happened, which was that as soon as her assailant spoke, she recognized his voice and confronted him as Mike Floyd. That's clearly not what she told Dr. Morgan in the first account of what happened. And that would have been powerful impeachment evidence of the only of her only way to identify her assailant. Again, trial counsel had this information in his file, and he failed to use it. There was no reason, no strategic reason, not to use this, and he testified that this would have been critical to the petitioner's defense.
Well, if his accomplice did the rape, why would she have accused Floyd?
Well, she was blindfolded. She may not have known who did it. Why would she accuse Floyd? I don't know why. It may have been simply a case of mistaken identity. We know from recent events that even eyewitness identification can be incorrect. This was not an eyewitness identification. This was a voice identification of just some very brief dialogue. It appeared from trial that the defense was that because Floyd and Deckard were friends and the victim had seen them together, that she would have just assumed that Floyd and Deckard would be together. Her other motivations for accusing Floyd, I don't know. But I don't think that, I mean, we don't have to show what those would have been, only that there's, again, that's what I was leading up to, that I don't think there can be any dispute here that trial counsel's performance was deficient. The real question is whether or not petitioner was prejudiced, with prejudice being defined as the reasonable probability of a different outcome. Those deficiencies must be weighed together in their aggregate. Both the serology evidence, which would have shown that there was some, which the sperm in the panties did not come from Mr. Floyd, and that there were some, certainly some impeachment problems with the victim's identification. That would have, I think, raised more than a negligible chance that Mr. Floyd would have been acquitted of this. In fact, I think
What did Ron Deckard testify, didn't he?
Yes, he did, Your Honor.
What did he testify to?
He testified, well, it was quite lengthy, but the bottom line was he testified that he had gone over to the Floyd house earlier in the day.
Now, what did he testify as to the rape?
He testified that Mike Floyd was the rapist, that he...
And he was there?
He was there, he assisted,
What's the penalty for assisting in a rape?
Well, in Indiana, the penalties would have been the same as the penalties for...
Raping,
which Mike Floyd got 110 years, so conceivably Deckard was facing the same. He ended up taking a guilty plea and getting 30.
But either way, you wind up with the same penalty.
That's correct. I mean, conceivably.
If you think if somebody accepts Deckard's testimony, either one, both of them wind up in the penitentiary with the same penalty.
Potentially. I mean, the difference.
No. My question was, if the jury accepts the testimony of Deckard, both of them are guilty of rape.
Yes, if the jury accepts that testimony.
Right.
That concludes my presentation, unless the court has other questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Cleary. Mr. Martin? May it please the court. This court should affirm the district court's denial of habeas relief because that court correctly determined that the Indiana Court of Appeals' rejection of Floyd's claims of ineffective assistance of counsel was a reasonable application of the two-pronged standard under Strickland v. Washington. With respect to Floyd's claims regarding the serology report from the FBI, both that claim and the claim regarding the notes taken by the examining physician after the rape required, if they were to be credited, for the jury to, based on that evidence had it been presented, to conclude that the victim witness was actually fabricating her testimony. There's nothing in the record that would suggest that there was a reason for this witness to fabricate her testimony. With respect to the Q2 specimen in the FBI report, that was one of six specimens that had serology tests conducted upon it, and it did indicate an ABO profile of blood type A with an H antigen, I believe. And the other five specimens could not exclude Floyd. They were inconclusive to show an ABO testing. The lack of this evidence to have created a reasonable probability of a different outcome lies in the fact that the victim testified quite clearly about Mike Floyd's voice as the rapist. This is more persuasive still when you consider that she had heard Deckard's voice repeatedly from the time that he had appeared in her car and abducted her, and over the course of putting her in the trunk, pulling her back out, putting the toboggan mask over her face. And also...
What sentence did Deckard receive?
Deckard, Your Honor, I believe was convicted of the conspiracy and confinement charges and was not convicted on rape charges, which I think...
He pled guilty to the charge of conspiracy.
Yes, and he was convicted and sentenced to 60 years.
He was guilty of the rape, though, wasn't he, under Indiana law?
Yes. They could have gone forward against him on the rape.
You mentioned her testimony, but what about the Dr. Morgan's notes, where she doesn't make any mention of who the individual is, or and she actually says she was raped by the man who doesn't speak, and the fact that that wasn't used?
Again, Your Honor, that would have required trial counsel to pursue a strategy of portraying the victim witness as a liar in front of the jury rather than as mistaken or confused about her testimony, which may not have been a wise strategy to elect. Nevertheless, the notes themselves are unpunctuated, basically kind of a stream of consciousness type of notation the doctor was taking during the course of a medical examination. The statements that's reflected in the notes that Floyd cites to could easily be interpreted in a way that was not consistent with the victim witness's testimony. Particularly, the fact that Deckard had been the person who had consistently and almost exclusively been the one that was commanding the victim during the course of the crime. The conversation between Mr. Floyd and the victim was regarding Mr. Floyd asking Deckard to remove the handcuffs or readjust the handcuffs on the victim, and then her subsequent inquiry to him about his identity. And notably, when she did that, she got to hear both Deckard and the attacker, whose voice she identified as Floyd, at the same time, because they both began to answer that question, who do you mean, Mike Floyd, something to that effect. So she's hearing both of their voices, Deckard's, that she's heard repeatedly up to that point, and Floyd's, that she based her identification upon approximately 15 previous conversations with Mr. Floyd in the past.
Yeah, but isn't it curious that that doesn't come out in the when the doctor is treating her, in terms of the identity of the victim?
Your Honor, are you asking me, is it curious?
Right, in terms of defense counsel not using that information, because there were a number of times that he dropped the ball with respect to serology, the poor report, the victim's inconsistent statements, the alibi witness, and I know you have a response to all of those things, but I'm looking at it from a cumulative standpoint.
In a cumulative sense, there are two other allegations of his ineffectiveness that are before this court that deal with the challenge to the testimony at sentencing,
right,
by Janet Collins and Scott Davis, and another that dealt with the fact that counsel failed to present testimony that was generally and rather ambiguously supportive of Floyd's alibi testimony.
Right, you have that coupled with the fact that Deckard certainly has a clear interest in this. I mean, he's subject to the same penalty as
certainly
Floyd
not.
Is, and so it's in his best interest certainly to cut a deal and to cooperate, which is what he did, and he had credibility problems. Would you say that he was sort of the linchpin of the state's case, since there was no outside physical evidence?
I would say he was important to the state's case, Your Honor. Linchpin, I don't know if I characterize it as the linchpin of the state's case, because the victim witness's testimony was crucial and critical to the state's case as well. But to the extent that he corroborated her account, yes, his testimony was important. But notably, there's no indication in the record that that the victim rendered her testimony and identified Floyd in response to previous disclosures made by Deckard to authorities, or vice versa. And the fact that the two corroborate one another and put Floyd at the scene of the crime is powerful evidence. And Your Honor, in response to the cumulativeness, the latter two allegations of error regarding the sentencing and the alibi testimony was found to be reasonable trial strategy by the state court, and I think that this was a correct determination. But I'd like to get back to the first two allegations with the serology evidence and doctor's notes in that to pursue that evidence would have required trial counsel to portray the victim witness as a liar, which may not have been a wise way to proceed. But at any rate, those two omissions, if we characterize them that way, by counsel, had they been done differently, had they been done now, as Floyd suggests that they should have been, they wouldn't have made a difference because of the interlocking strength of the state's case, which is Deckard's testimony as it corroborated the victims, the false statements that Floyd made during the conduct of a polygraph test that he stipulated to, the authorities that heard him talk about being with Deckard until 2 o'clock in the morning, when in fact he then took the stand and gave testimony that he had taken Deckard home to Deckard's home and then returned to his own home and went to bed.
And you mentioned that polygraph, which was a stipulation, of course, the first polygraph test he passed, but his counsel didn't offer that into evidence. I mean, there was no stipulation with respect to that. It's just kind of odd he'd enter into a stipulation on the second polygraph where this guy failed and then doesn't attempt to get in the first. I mean, it's, when you look at competence of counsel, you kind of question his ability there as well. In Indiana, is a polygraph admissible?
I mean, it is, Your Honor, by stipulation. And
so the state couldn't have gotten it in if his counsel hadn't agreed.
The stipulation is up front, isn't it?
Right. The stipulation is before the test is conducted.
Yeah.
And I think...
And so when you think he's going to pass, you let him take it and enter the stipulation.
Exactly, Your Honor, because he had passed the previous one. I think that is what influenced trial counsel to allow him to take another one with the stipulation.
How is Floyd caught? How is he identified?
Floyd, I believe, was arrested after police arrested Deckard on Lori's statement.
So she mentioned Deckard first?
Yes, I believe
Deckard
Floyd,
then named Floyd.
Correct, Your Honor.
So she didn't initially accuse Floyd.
I believe her statement did initially mention Floyd, but I'm not sure of that, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. I don't want to misrepresent the record, but I believe it did. And a final note about the strength of the interlocking evidence is that Floyd's own alibi places him with Deckard that night. And in fact, Deckard, just as Deckard's testimony tracked the victims regarding the conduct of the crime, Deckard's testimony further tracked Floyd's up to the point where Floyd then says that he returned home. Floyd testified that he'd gone to work after Deckard's car didn't start at Floyd's home. So Floyd dropped Deckard off at Deckard's home, went to work, then went and picked Deckard back up again. They would return to Floyd's home to try and get the car to start. And at that point, Floyd took Deckard home and said that he returned home and was home by, I think, 11:20 p.m. was his account. That tracked Deckard's testimony, except that from there, Deckard winds up at Stone City Products and in the car of the victim. And regarding any of these errors that are alleged, or these deficiencies rather, that are alleged on behalf of counsel, none of them taken cumulatively or individually would constitute a reasonable probability of a different result.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mark. Mr. Cleary, how much time does he have? 2 minutes? So what is your theory of what happened? That she tried to frame Floyd?
No, my theory is that she's mistaken. I mean, that she knows Deckard. You know, she sees Deckard. Deckard's in the car with her. She may well
have... But did she know that Floyd was present?
No, my theory is... The best theory I have is that she didn't know. She doesn't know the other attacker. She's blindfolded. She's going strictly
on the... She knows there's another attacker.
Yes. That she believes there's another attacker. I mean, she hears the cars. She
hears two voices. She hears two people.
Right. She hears muffled conversations.
You're not questioning that.
No. I just believe that she's mistaken as to who the other attacker is.
She did mention his name to the police, didn't didn't she?
After first stating that she was raped by a man who didn't speak. So I believe that there's some doubt
about
that.
Why do you think she got to now? I see you.
Well, my theory would be that she knows Floyd and Deckard run around together.
Right.
If she did think it's Floyd, then Deckard has no reason to. I mean, then we've got a suspect, even if it's mistaken. I mean, voice identification, I don't think I'm not sure how reliable that is, but I would also note the prosecutor got up and told the jury, Ron Deckard's a liar. That's what, you know, important to keep in mind, Deckard's credibility here. They got all the implements of this rape came from Deckard. There's another pair of handcuffs in the car, in Deckard's car. There's a piece of paper with the victim's name on it in Deckard's car. Keep in mind Deckard's credibility here. I take issue with the respondent. I don't think Deckard got 60 years, Judge. I think he got 30 years.
And then in terms of this tactic, in terms of Dr. Morgan's notes, counsel says that in order to challenge that, he would have had to call the victim a liar. Do you think he could have just said she was mistaken?
Absolutely.
Under the theory that you were arguing?
I'm not here to argue the victim was lying. Once he goes to trial and his defense is, I didn't do it, he has to then take issue with the victim. I mean, there's no way to go to trial, say you didn't do it, and argue that somehow the victim is telling the correct story. This isn't a consent. Yes, I did it, but I...
It has to be lying, because her testimony was emphatic that she heard that the assailant spoke.
Well, it may well be that she's lying, but once you embark down the road to trial...
Then the argument, how plausible is that?
Well, again, it's a question of, is there a shot at an acquittal, and I think there was.
Okay, well, thank you very
much,
Mr. Cleary and Mr. Martin.